Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, your weekly space for teens, parents, families, educators, and anyone who's paying attention. We dive into the issues that shape, challenge, and sometimes disrupt our daily lives. It's 411 Teen, where conversations matter. Summer gardening in North Florida can be both rewarding and challenging. Between the heat, sandy soils, sudden downpours, and sometimes long dry spells, growing food and maintaining healthy landscapes requires knowledge, planning, and sometimes a little help from the experts. Today, on Garden Talk, we're joined by someone who spends his days helping residents turn questions into successful gardens. Whether you're growing tomatoes in your backyard, herbs on an apartment balcony, citrus trees in your neighborhood, or working a plot in a community garden, today's program is designed just for you. My guest is Trevor Hilton, urban agricultural agent with the Leon County Extension Program, part of the University of Florida, IFAS, that's Institute of Food and Agriculture Services Extension Program. He works closely with residents on everything from soil health and irrigation to pest management and sustainable urban culture. Joining us via the Zoom platform, 411 Teen welcomes back Trevor Hilton. Hi, Trevor.
Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm so glad to have you back. Just for the listeners, the new listeners, just share what exactly an urban agriculture extension agent does.
Well, urban ag agent like myself, we help a lot of folks, especially small-scale growers, and even just someone operating in their backyard. So I work with anyone who is growing any economic crop. So school gardens, church gardens, community gardens, all of these fall under my purview.
Okay. As we look at what's happening here in North Florida, would you share what are some of the biggest mistakes North Florida gardeners make going into the summer?
One of the things that a lot of gardeners, and maybe especially for new gardeners, the mistake they make is underestimating our climate. The North Florida climate can be, you know, brutal. It can get very hot and lots of rain. And before you know it, you're going to have a lot of weeds growing. So it's going to require a lot of time spent, you know, taking care of these plants. And sometimes folks underestimate how much time it's going to take to run a garden.
Well, how at this point, how is this summer shaping up compared to typical conditions?
This one is a little different. We are drier than we have been. We have been under severe drought, but in some cases, it can be bad and it can be good because our typical summer is hot, lots of rain. And what we're having right now is dry with not much rain. So that means there's not as many disease problems as we normally would have in the hot, rainy summer months.
Okay. Now, I know this drought stresses, you know, the plants differently than heat. Can you make that distinction for us so we can understand how the drought stresses plants differently than the heat alone?
With the heat stress, you would probably see your plants wilting. And, you know, that That would be, kind of typical for summer. Folks would just have to irrigate more frequently. But this drought that we're having right now is affecting, well, I would say mainly things like lawns and all that, because folks are watering their other plants. And I'm hoping that we do not have to get into a water restriction, because then we could have some serious problems.
Okay. Are there signs that tell gardeners their plants are struggling?
Sure. The first sign you're going to see is that your plants are probably not as vigorous as they normally would. They probably grow a little bit slower. Might even start seeing some signs of plant turning yellow, because they might not be able to take up as much nutrients as they need. So these are, just the typical signs that tells you that, there might be some issue that needs to be taken care of.
Okay, at this point, what should gardeners be doing right now to prepare? What would you recommend?
Right now, for vegetable gardening, most folks are, we're kind of like in the middle of the planting season. So a lot of folks are getting their seedlings probably from their local nurseries, and they're putting these plants into the ground. They have to be prepared to water them very frequently because of the drought conditions that we're in. Well, thankfully we're not very hot, so that's working out real good. But just get your beds ready for planting and start your planting now.
Do you think how, well, let me put it this way. How successful would gardening be in this area if one focuses on the environment instead of trying to fight it, working with the environment? Because I think lots of times you find gardeners trying to fight what's happening, and sometimes you don't have any control over that.
You are so right about that. We see, or I see this a lot, with maybe folks who are not from this area, not very familiar with, they used to have pretty much a different climate where they're from. Either it was colder or spring start later, all those different things, and they seem to think that they can just use the same techniques that they applied, where they're from, and it would just normally work here. And a lot of times it can be to their detriment.
Okay. Well, so often you hear feed the soil, not just the plant. Share with us exactly what that means.
That you, if you are feeding the plant, you have to understand that yes, the plant will get the nutrients that you put in, but there's more that goes into growing a plant than just nutrient. There are lots of things that come together. There are lots of microorganisms that help the plant roots to take up these nutrients. And if you start practices that would affect these microbes, you're not giving them enough moisture that they need, you're not keeping enough water around for these, using mulch and other stuff, and adding organic material, then you can start having problems. So, it might not happen the first year, but eventually you would have problems.
Would you make that distinction between dirt and healthy soil?
Well, me and my colleagues, we always have this, you know, whenever we get folks in here, and even our new master gardeners, we always try to educate them about the difference between dirt and soil. Soil is what's going to grow your crops. And we would tell them that maybe dirt's what you find under your fingernail.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Okay, I like that. That helps a lot. Okay. Now, with the Leon County Extension, what does soil testing involve?
Well, that's one of the services we provide here. If you're going to start a garden, we always recommend that start with a soil test. You need to know what's in the garden and what's lacking and what you would need to add. You know, years gone by, people would just find a little spot, they till the soil, they would go out and they would put lime, and then they had 10-10-10 fertilizer, and then they plant, because that was how they were taught. And, you know, that's not working now, because you can't just put out fertilizer. If the plant cannot take it up, it means it's going to run off. It's going to get into our groundwater system. So you make sure you test the soil, because sometimes it's just a matter of the pH in the soil that might be off. And because of that, the plant cannot take up the nutrients is there. So start with a good soil test, and that we can provide right here at the Leon County Extension Office.
So they just get a sample of their soil and just bring it to the office?
No, they would come into the office, and we would give them a kit.
Okay.
And then we would tell them how to take the sample. And then they would mail it off to the soils lab in Gainesville. There's a $10 charge, and it gives you a complete analysis of nutrients, with the exception of nitrogen. But, you know, most of your macronutrients and some of your micronutrients. And it also gives you the pH of the soil. And if you tell them the crop you're going to plant, if they would provide you with a fertilizer recommendation.
Okay, hold your thoughts for a second. You're tuned in to 411 Team. We're going to take a brief break. We'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and we have our special annual program today, Garden Talk. Garden Talk with Trevor Hilton, Urban Agriculture Agent with the Leon County Extension Program. He's giving us all the to-dos and not-to-dos on gardening. Trevor, what are the biggest soil problems locally that we experience?
Well, our soils here are, you know, tend to be very sandy. So they drain very quickly. That can be good. It can be bad. It means that you're going to have to water more frequently. But we also don't have the richest soil. You know, our soil is not as rich with nutrients for the plants. So we would, for the most part, may need to have some amendment. Okay. We would probably need to add compost and manures and other stuff to, you know, help the plants be more productive.
Talk to us, please, about compost and manures as far as adding them, you know, to our soil. Maybe distinguishing the two.
Compost is basically decayed organic material, you know, material that is completely decomposed. And when added to the soil, it helps in a number of ways. It helps with the nutrients, it helps with the moisture retention. It also helped by adding some of the much needed microbes that the soil, the plants would need to take up nutrients. So it is, probably one of the best thing you can do for your soil. And it also helps to buffer the soil. So if your soil is too acidic, it would help to bring the pH up. And if it's too alkaline, it can also help to lower your pH. So it works wonders. It's probably one of the best thing you can do for your soil.
And we can do our own composting, correct? Because it's
That is,
organic. So does that mean anything and everything? Does that include bones?
it means you can do your own composting, and I would say you should do your own composting. And no, bones are probably not going to be one of the best things for a homeowner to try to compost. I mean, I'm never going to say never, you can't do this, because maybe on a more commercial basis you probably could do that, but for a homeowner, no, because when you start adding any kind of meats or oils or any those kind of stuff to your compost, you're going to invite critters to come to your compost.
Well, how important is mulch?
Mulch, very important, and probably more so for us here in North Florida during our late spring to summer, because this is when we're going to have the soil losing a lot of moisture. So you need to have something to help keep that moisture in. During wintertime, mulch can be very helpful. It would warm the soil up probably a little bit quicker, so you can plant a little earlier. So mulch really does a good job of retaining moisture in the soil, and also it helps to regulate the temperature of the soil.
Well, I got to get back to watering because everybody is in question about watering. How should one's watering practices change during drought? I mean, what should we do? How do we handle this?
You're going to need to water probably a little bit more frequently, but you also need to water deep, very deeply. Once your plants become established, you don't want to be watering every day, because you're basically would be encouraging the plant roots to stay close to the surface of the soil, because that's where they're going to get water. So you do deep watering and do it less frequently once the plants become fully established. But of course, yes, you would be in a drought situation, and but definitely use mulch to your advantage here also, and do deep watering probably less frequently, and definitely do not water late in the evenings or at night.
So if you were going to identify the biggest watering mistakes that people make, what would be the biggest one?
Believe it or not, most people overwater sometimes. You would think that the problem is that they don't provide. No, they tend to overwater, and overwatering can cause a lot of root diseases. Root rots come in play, and before you know it, you think you're doing such a good job keeping your plants well hydrated when you're really doing it a disservice by overwatering.
So watering in the morning is better than watering in the evening.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, we have no control over when the rain falls
Right.
because the rain will fall in the evenings also. But where you do have control, where you can prevent getting water late in the evenings, you definitely should do. And do not water the leaves of your plant because plants do not take up much moisture from their leaves. It's the roots that needs the water.
Do you have any irrigation systems? Well, first, I guess I want you to talk about the different irrigation systems and what ones you would recommend for small gardens.
There are many options when it comes to irrigation. You have the typical overhead irrigation where you have a sprinkler that circles round and round and, sprays water over the entire plot. But that's not the most efficient because maybe only 30% of that water gets to the roots of the plant where it's needed. A large portion is lost to evaporation. Then another big portion is water in places where you don't need to be watered. Maybe you're watering your walkways, you're watering, weeds and other stuff that you don't intend to water. So that's one way, but there are some micro irrigation systems, and most of your nurseries and those places, you can get sometimes an entire kit that you can just put together. They use a low pressure system. They're not very inexpensive, but yes, the initial costs sometimes might, keep some folks from doing this because it's probably easier to just get that sprinkler and just put it out there. But you would be well served by getting an irrigation system, either with micro emitters or with drip tubes.
Now, are there particular drought-tolerant crops that do well here?
The answer is yes, but if we look at say our vegetable crops, you're not going to find many that are going to be that drought tolerant. Yeah, you have some crops like okra will do, relatively well even under a drought situation as opposed to say your tomatoes and your peppers. That's gonna have a greater water needs than your okra. But for the most part, our vegetable crops, you take things like cucumber, squash, watermelon, those kind of stuff. They're gonna have a good desire for regular water.
Now, are there any crops that really, I would guess, are hidden gem crops that more people should try and don't in this area, and they might find some real hidden success there?
One of the things I always encourage folks to do is grow what you like. That's very important because especially when it comes to your vegetable crops, or even if you're growing, say, a fruit tree, grow the stuff that you like. You're gonna enjoy it more. It's gonna be so much more fulfilling. But yes, there are some things that would probably do a little better. If you like things like eggplants, okra, sweet potatoes, those kind of stuff, they're probably not as needy as some of your other crops like your tomatoes, your bell peppers, those kind of stuff.
What about herbs? What do you recommend? Herbs, what do you recommend?
Herbs, I always think that, if you're growing any kind of a vegetable garden, if it's just a family plot, you should designate at least a small area for herbs. You're not going to use herbs in large quantities, so you don't necessarily have to plant a lot. But have a small area designated for your herbs, and then just make sure that you're planting the just like your vegetable garden, there are certain spring type herbs and there are certain winter type herbs. So just make sure you have the right one in the garden.
What about native plants? Is there anything that is native to the area that you would recommend or tell us to keep away from as far as that's concerned?
If you're considering, and I'm just pulling this one out, like fruit trees, for that matter, a good native is pawpaw. If it's something that you like, because this is a very easy tree to grow. It grows anywhere from zone 3 to I think zone 11. So it is grown in a wide cross section of the United States. And it is known to grow even in poor soils. It's known to grow even on river banks. It grows just about anywhere. It has very, very few pests or disease problems. So yes, that's easy to grow.
Okay. All right. How can we as gardeners support pollinators? What do you suggest? What do you offer there?
One of the things we have to do, and we have to keep in mind, that pollinators are extremely important for agriculture anywhere at all. There are some crops that are they are only pollinated by a pollinator. Some plants that are not self-pollinating, so it needs to have some insect to come by and take pollen from one plant over to another. And even when you buy a plant and it says, well, this plant is self-fertile, meaning that it's self-pollinating, it can benefit from having a pollinator, a bee or something that visit that will definitely improve the production from that plant.
Well, can we look, let me look at gardening options for different living situations. Several folks wanted to make sure I ask you to, identify, qualify these. Can someone, first of all, really grow meaningful food in containers? Is that a reality?
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer that any plant that can grow in the ground can grow in a container. And I'm going even as far as to say even a fruit tree.
Oh, okay, because that would, I was going to ask you about that citrus.
So I'm saying that, yes, you would probably have to manage it a little bit different. You're not going to probably grow a 10, 12 foot tree in a 5 gallon bucket. That's not probably going to happen. But yeah, in some cases you can keep the size of the tree, where it's manageable. And especially if you're just growing for yourself, yeah, you might reduce your production by pruning it and keeping it in check, but you would still be able to get enough food for help for your For your you and your family. And I'm talking about things even like citrus and some of those, they can still do very well in a container.
Is there any particular type of container that you recommend? I mean, I have seen the cloth. Then, you know, I know as far as plants are concerned, often clay is preferred over plastic. So any, what do you recommend?
If you're going to use a plastic container, I would just suggest that you keep in mind whether or not it's one of those that is UV rated, because some of these plastics will break down real quickly once they're exposed to, you know, different weather condition. So if it's something that you plan on keeping in a pot for a long time, get a good pot. Clay pots have a tendency to dry out a little bit quicker, so then you would have to consider how you're going to manage this. You might have to water a little bit more frequently. Yes, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. you know, they can work. But if it's for a short term basis, just about anything that will hold some soil can use as a container.
How deep should the container be?
If you're planting most of your, you know, I'm saying your vegetable crops, and I'm just pulling these now, like say tomatoes, peppers, okra, or even corn, eggplants, those kind of stuff. You don't need a very deep container. Okay. Most of these, if you have something that's 12 inches or maybe a little bit more, you should be quite fine with that.
Okay. May I ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment? We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to Garden Talk with Trevor Hilton. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and Trevor, thanks again so much. You always share such valuable information with us about gardening, and I want you to know we really appreciate you. We were talking about containers, and as far as containers are concerned, what about raised beds? Talk to us about raised beds.
That's one of the things right now, and that's very popular. You know, I mean, there are many folks out there who are selling different types of raised beds. There are some that are actually raised from off the ground up to, you know, waist height, so, you know, folks don't have to do as much bending. Mm-hmm. There are some that are made from metal. There's some that are made from wood. Just, you know, a lot of different variations here. And any kind of raised beds can be very helpful, like I said, because of, in some cases where if you have very poor soil, if you are ever in an area where you're not really sure about the soil, you know, if there might be any contaminants, raised beds can be very helpful in those situations. And raised beds warm up a lot quicker. You can start planting earlier. And there are certain pest problems that you don't have to encounter. You know, I mean, snail slugs are not very happy about crawling up on those raised beds. So you can get away with it. And even in some cases, things, you'll find that there are some other insects that, you know, you don't have to deal with when you have raised beds. So it's always, always, always a good option.
For beginners, where would you recommend they start?
I would start, I would definitely start with raised bed, as opposed to planting in the ground.
Okay.
You have more control over the soil that you because you're going to put the soil in. So you will know exactly what's in there. However, we need to keep in mind that raised beds would probably be a little bit more expensive, the initial costs. Because, if you were going to even build the raised beds, you're going to have to buy the material. You're going to have to buy the soil that goes in. You know, that could, be very costly. But once you get it done, it could go on for, many, many years without you having to do anything.
Okay. Community gardens. What are the advantages of a plot in a community garden?
Well, as the name suggests, community, this is a good place where people, get together. So it's not just the gardening. You can learn from other gardeners in the garden. If you are in a situation where you don't have, let's just say you're living in an apartment and there's just no land space at all, you can always go to, a community garden and you can grow in a 20 by 20 plot. You can grow enough food to feed a family of four relatively easy from something, that size. So always, always a good idea if you don't have enough space.
I know we kind of touched on some of the things that are involved, some of the circumstances and environments that are involved in citrus growing. And I know the answer to this, but I want to hear you say it for my listening audience. Can residents really grow citrus successfully locally?
Oh, yes. And, a lot of folks seem to think that, all we can grow here are satsuma, which is a real cold-hardy situation. But I would tell you, this is not the case. There are many tangerines, oranges, grapefruits, lots of different varieties of citrus that will grow very well in our area. And if folks want to take a walk over to the Leon County Extension office on Paul Russell Road, we have an orchard there with lots of citrus trees that I've planted maybe a good 10, 12 years now. So you could see some of the varieties that do very well here. And they have been producing, a significant amount of fruit ever since.
What are the challenges, though, for growing citrus plants today? What are the challenges and, I guess, the most common mistakes that folks make?
Okay, my estimate, citrus is probably one of the easier fruit trees because once they become established, and note that I say once they become established. Now, on the other side, you ask about what are the common mistakes. The common mistake is that, folks would plant these trees and they say, well, this is a cold hardy citrus, so I'm okay. And then you get a winter where we get down into the teens. And even the most cold hardy citrus, if they're in their early stages, if they're very young trees, they can be killed very easily. But once the trees become fully established, even if they get a little bit of winter damage, they usually bounce back. So you might have to do a little bit of covering up to protect them during those real hard freeze in the first 2 to 3 years.
So as far as maintenance, citrus, do they require a lot of maintenance once they get established?
No, they don't. And this is probably why I like them. It's a very unique tree. They, like I said, they're cold hardy. They're evergreen. And they provide you a very nice blossom in early spring, which is, very fragranted. So you get that much. And then by late summer, going into fall, you start getting fruit.
Yeah.
So, I
Yeah.
mean, that's probably the best case, as opposed to, say, something like your other deciduous trees, like your peaches, plums, those kind of
I
stuff that's
see.
going to lose their leaves. You're going to have to prune them on a regular basis. They have lots of pest problems, so you're going to have to spray to control those pests. Citrus has very, very few significant problems as far as pests.
You touched on something I wanted to further explore, or at least you have you address with citrus, and that is pruning. You know, how much does one really need to prune, and when is the proper time?
There's not very much pruning that's going to be needed from a citrus tree. If your tree start to get to the point where it's encroaching on a building nearby, or it's crowding out another tree or something, or it's getting a little bit too tall, you might have to, cut it back a little bit. But it's not a type of fruit tree that you're going to have to do regular pruning. The only thing I would say is that, if your tree gets a little too tall, cut it back, but don't wait until it's overgrown and then try to contain it, because you don't want to take off more than a third of the tree at any one time.
Okay. Fertilizer. Is there a nutritional deficiency? If so, when does it usually occur? How do you feel? What do you feel about fertilizing? Not just even your citrus, but fertilizing your vegetables.
There is a like I said, our soils here tend to be deficient in a lot of nutrients, yes, and would probably require some amount of supplemental fertilizer. We have to bear in mind also, when we say fertilizer, there are organic fertilizer and there are inorganic fertilizer. So there are different options. So if one is an organic grower, you don't necessarily have to use a inorganic fertilizer, because there are options out there for you as far as getting those nutrients. The timing for, most of this is, especially for, let's just say, vegetables for that matter. In the early stages, when the plants are flowering, when the plants are producing, those times are very important that the plant has, enough nutrient. Once the production stage has gotten to a point where your fruits are starting to ripen and all that, then that's not the time when you're going to need much fertilizer then.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. That's great. I know mine are just flourishing. They are just going wild, taking over. So I have a blood orange that is, it's really to die for. It's really good. And the tree is getting larger and larger and larger. So thanks to you. I've always asked you about what to do about it, and I certainly appreciate it. We have not talked about in this last session, we have not talked about weed control much with the vegetables. Tell us how I don't know what we can do, but tell us how we can control our weeds.
You will need to
Hard
do some
work.
forward planning. Think about what you're gonna do, and mulch
Okay.
heavily to try and keep your weeds down. There are folks who use, synthetic type mulch, like plastic mulch. And it works relatively well for some stuff. There are some weeds that plastic mulch is not going to do anything for. If you're familiar with some of the grassy type weeds, the plastic mulch doesn't do a good job of controlling those. As a matter of fact, no mulch really, you know, gonna do a good job of controlling those grassy type weeds. But your other broadleaf weeds, yes, you can mulch and keep those under control. What you, it's not a one-time thing. It's not, you're gonna have to be adding more mulch as you go along. So it's probably the only way. And it's still not gonna be enough to where you say, well, I don't have to get out there with a hoe or mm-hmm. something, and I don't have to pull any weeds. You will have to do some of those weed control, some mechanical weed control.
Would you say that some of the pests and diseases and weed control would be dependent upon the time of the year?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. There are certain pests that are, you know, they favor the warm weather. So now is the time when you're going to see a lot of things, stink bugs and those kind of critters coming out. And one of the things that I've noticed, it seemed like each year we have a high influx of maybe one or two particular insects. It might be grasshoppers one year. It might be stink bugs another year. It's just some of those years where, you know, those particular pests are in just large, large numbers. So you have to look out for those and planting early, especially for your vegetable crops, planting early and getting ahead of these insects can be, you know, somewhat successful.
Two questions before we close. Hope I can get them in. Many people really don't realize how much the county extension offers. Would you just kind of share some of the other services that are available?
We do have programs in family and consumer sciences. We have 4-H programs, you know, which I think most people might be aware of. We have, you know, just so many other stuff that's happening here. Always have things happening. We have many sometimes paid or unpaid programs that are available. So it's very important that, you know, folks, you know, just maybe check out our website, okay. See what's happening and see if there are any programs that, you know, you could find very useful. We work very closely, you know, with a lot of different agencies and provide services that can help the citizens of this county.
Just give us an example for the listening audience of the kind of problem a resident can bring to the Extension Center. Just so they have an idea, just what you would address.
Well, I was just looking up my emails earlier and you know, we get a lot of folks who take pictures of issues that they're having with plants. Like, you know, even some of the local nurseries, there are some things that they are not able to identify. We had a local nursery who was having problems with some of their tomato plants. And, you know, they would send us pictures and ask us what's going on here. What can we do to correct this? So we help with those kind of things. Actually, we also, like myself, I can go out and visit any individual. If there's a particular problem that we can't solve over the phone or through pictures from emails, I can do a home visit and where I probably, you know, have a better insight of what's going on and, you know, better able to solve that problem.
Okay. Well, this edition of 411 Teen featured Garden Talk with Trevor Hilton. There's nothing like having a hand-picked fruit or vegetable from your own garden. So, Trevor, again, I can't extend to you enough how much we appreciate it. You have been extremely helpful. You always are. And it's always a favorite time of the year to have everybody's always asking you, doing your garden talk. So thank you so much for always being supportive and willing to do this. To my listening audience, I thank you for your time and ear. And until next time, stay safe, stay cool, and keep growing on 411 Teen. 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. If you would like to participate in the 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Teen at wfsu.org.